All right. Any of our youth group members that want to come up front, or any of our younger kids that want to come up front, I have a gift for you when the sermon is over. Come on up. Y'all can come on up. Yeah. Great. Come on up. Parents, I'm sorry. The gift is rocks. I tell you what. Why don't y'all sit on the front right there, in some of those chairs right there up front? Yeah, we're going to make it look like people are excited to sit in the front row. Yeah. Yeah, there we go. There we go. Just get up closer. Yeah, Jackson asked me earlier before church, he said, what's in that bucket? I told him rocks, but I didn't think he believed me, but it's actually rocks. I've got 5 rocks right here that I picked out of that group. It's my nice Texas bag. It's a little different than a shepherd's bag. But I've got these ordered, 1 through 5. I asked last week, I asked the question, how many of you know why David had 5 rocks? I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, that the Bible specifically mentions he selected 5. I mean, why not just say he went and got some stones and he used one of them to kill Goliath? But does anyone know why 5? Did anyone look it up? Anyone know why 5 stones? Deborah Markwell came up to me after church. I didn't think I had mentioned this here before, but it's possible that I have. And she told me the answer. She said, I'm almost certain that you said it, but I don't remember saying it here. But let me just talk to you a little bit about why 5 stones, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But really, I think this is just a lesson to remind us that God is powerful enough to slay the giants in our own lives. Now, let me ask you all as young people first, and as older people, so everyone beyond these first 2 rows is older people, okay? Let's just establish that automatically. Everyone beyond these first 2 rows is older people. Well, you're technically in the, Eric was talking about being chosen as a grandpa. You're technically in one of the first 2 rows. I only did that because Christy's in the second row too. But I want you to answer this as well. Have you faced difficult situations in life? Anybody faced it? Maybe a kid on the playground is a bully, right? Maybe you've had some challenging relationships with friends. How many as adults have we faced difficult situations? You know, in adulthood, we've faced some pretty tough stuff, haven't we? Most of us have in life. We all have. And, I think about some of the difficulties I've faced. I think about some of the difficulties you've faced. I think about, through the years, some of the difficulties that I've talked to people about that they've experienced in life. And I think, when I think about that, when I think about my own difficulties, think about yours and others and their difficulties, sometimes it seems like the odds are insurmountable, right? They're just stacked against us. Doesn't feel like in any way possible we can get through them or get over them. Have you ever felt overwhelmed with life, adults? Those, maybe not so much the kids here, the youth group members here, but adults, have we felt a little overwhelmed in life? I've tell you, there have been moments in my life, I know there have been moments in our married life when we made decisions and we felt a little overwhelmed by that decision that we made, or possibly because of a strained relationship, we felt a little bit overwhelmed. We feel like that, you know, everything's just kind of bearing down on us, somewhat closing in. I don't think we're, the only ones. I think in general in life, we all feel a little bit like that. Maybe it's a temptation. Anyone deal with temptation in here? I know as young people, your temptations are going to be a little different than the older people, but the temptations are nonetheless there. We feel like that temptation's constantly coming back, and there are probably moments where we've given into it. There are moments where we want to just avoid it and we want to get beyond it. And God tells us He gives us strength to handle it. Again, life can help us. I'm sorry, God can help us through the challenges in life. Life is certainly difficult. Does anyone know why life is difficult? Any of you know why life is difficult? Anybody? It's a simple answer. Why is life difficult? Okay, life isn't fair. Well, there's probably some truth to some of that. Not everyone's nice. That's kind of close to the actual answer, really. Life is tough because of people. Right? How many of you like free will? You like the idea of making your own choices. As adults, we love that, don't we? We love free will. You know, the bad thing about free will is that everyone out there has it too. Right? All of those people out there have it. And they get to make their own decisions. And sometimes people make bad decisions, right? They don't always make good decisions. And that's tough on those of us who love God and on those of us who want to obey God's will. And so when we think about some of the difficulties and some of the challenges we face, they can kind of mount up and become giant-like, right? Now, I told you last week that the Bible is filled with some interesting characters. I don't know if you know that in the Bible there is a witch named the witch from Endor. How many of you have heard that story before, right? It's an interesting story. We talked last week about some different monsters that we called them in the Bible. Well, we're going to talk about a giant tonight. And I know many of you know his name. What's his name? The giant, what's his name? Goliath, right? We're going to talk about Goliath. He was a real person. This isn't just a fanciful story. This isn't just one of those stories that have been passed down from generation to generation that was kind of cool. No, this is an actual real story. And in 1 Samuel chapter 17, you get a lot of the story of Goliath. Now, let me just ask real quick, because I don't want to tell the whole story. How many of you know the story of David and Goliath, first and foremost? Most of us in here know that, right? We know the story of David and Goliath. Well, if you'll just forgive me for a few moments, I want to jump around to several passages in 1 Samuel 17. So if you've got a Bible, open up to 1 Samuel 17. And I want to start with verse 4. In verse 4, we kind of come to the story and one of the main characters in the story. True story, for sure. And a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath from, where's he from? Someone answered it back there. Jim answered it. He is from Gath. Excuse me. He's from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits. And a span. Now I want to talk about that. Anyone know how high that is? 6 cubits and a span? I'll talk about that in just a moment. But in verses 8 through 11 in 1 Samuel 17, look at verses 8 through 11. Then he stood and he cried out to the armies of Israel and said to them, "Why have you come out to line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine and you the servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us." And the Philistine said, "I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." And when Saul and all of Israel heard these words, the words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now, Israel literally had a giant right before them. And no one wanted to go down there. I mean, this challenge happened on multiple occasions, right? No one wanted to go down there. A cubit is from your forearm. I think it's to the top of your tallest finger. Now, what's interesting about measuring a cubit, it's really hard to know that distance. It came to be somewhere around 18 inches. But what's interesting about a cubit is that a cubit was always based on the king's forearm to the top of his finger. So Saul, who was king at the time, was head and shoulders above every other Jew. So if a Jew at that time was somewhere around 5'5 to 5'7 and Saul was head and shoulders taller than everyone else, well, possibly his forearm to the top of his tallest finger was probably taller than the average Jew, right? So it varied based on the king. And so Goliath, based on those measurements, could be somewhere around 9 foot 9 inches tall to 11 foot, 8 inches tall. Now, to show you this, Joseph, if you'll come up here, this would probably be a close ratio. Eric told me this morning when I got Joseph up, and he said, praise the Lord. He said, Charles, you preached the second best sermon today. But look at the ratio here. So, well, actually stand down on the ground there. So this would be, you know, a pretty big difference, right? It would be like me and Joseph actually having a head-to-head fight, right? So go sit back down with your mom now. That's about the ratio, a comparable ratio. In verse 11, it also tells us that Israel was greatly afraid. Now, thinking back to some of the difficulties we face in life, have you ever been afraid at school? Anyone? Have there been moments where you've been afraid in other areas of life? As adults, have there been moments where we have feared things in our life? Maybe it was a boss, or maybe it was a neighbor, or maybe it was just some situation that you didn't want to be in. We're a lot like Israel. We kind of understand it. We get it, don't we? In verse 24, it says, "And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid." So in verse 24, we learned that everyone was pretty much scared of Goliath. No one wanted to go down there. It didn't matter how many times he came out and gave the challenge. It didn't matter who was on their side, which who was on their side? Who was on their side? Who was on Israel's side? God. But they didn't think about that, did they? All they could see was what was right in front of them. And everyone was afraid. Now, I tried to think about this, about some of the things that they would have been afraid of. Maybe they thought, now, I'm not trying to be judgmental here, but I would say that an 11-foot, 8-inch man would be pretty heavy, would weigh a lot. Wouldn't you agree? So maybe they thought, well, he weighs too much. Or maybe they thought he's too tall, kind of like the ratio when you look at Joseph against me. Maybe they thought that, you know, Goliath is just too tall. What can we do? You know, if you're in a fight, wingspan matters, doesn't it? Now, obviously, skill and other things go into that as well, but wingspan is an important thing. Maybe they thought his wingspan, he had too great of a reach. Or you can't literally get rid of him because we couldn't move him. You know, if we got into battle, what could we do with this guy? And so, they had a lot of fear just over what they saw before them. So, number one, I want you to just think about, you know, David the giant killer. Just think about his story. This is all of what's going on. And who's David? David's this young shepherd boy. He's not even old enough to be in camp with his brothers and at the fight. He's just basically an errand boy. He's carrying food back and forth to his brothers. He's basically just, hey, dad says, hey, why don't you take this to them? Not really able, but what does David see when he gets there? Like, this shouldn't be happening. Have you ever, as God's child, been in a situation when you thought, this should not be happening among God's people? I mean, we've had moments like that as adults. I will tell you, you will probably have moments like that as you get older in life. And so that's the way it was with David. And so David is this giant killer, but understand, he wasn't even supposed to be there. And certainly was not supposed to be in the fight. The second thing I think is that's interesting is we talk about this as being an underdog story, right? How many of you like underdog stories? I mean, I know A&M fans like underdog stories, right? From last week. It was an underdog story, right? And the underdog won. We like stories like that. No one laughed at that. Okay. Is this really an underdog story? I mean, think about it. Is it really an underdog story? Are we saying it's an underdog story just because David is a young boy and he's small? I mean, as you start to learn and David matures and he goes into battle, he doesn't seem much like an underdog, does he? When you see David and all of the victories that he gains. Now, we're enamored with underdog stories. You know, I love it when NCAA basketball championship comes around and there's always one of those, we call them Cinderella teams that just kind of make it and they keep making it and we're enamored by that. We're just an, but this, in reality, as God's people, as Christians, is this really an underdog story? Again, let's jump around for a few moments. In verses 5-7, when you think about David and just because we like it because it appears to be a mismatch. In verse 5, he had a bronze helmet on his head and he was armed with a coat, of mail. And the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze, and he had a bronze armor and on his legs and a bronze javelin between his shoulders. And now the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels, and a shield bearer went before him. Goliath is a pretty big dude, right? Again, just by reading through some of the verses, this by appearance seems to be a little bit like an underdog story. In verse 40, and that was the verse that Mike read, then he took his staff in his hand and he chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook and he put them in the shepherd's bag in a pouch which he had, and his sling was in his hand and he drew near to the Philistine. Now I want you to think about this. By appearance, what Goliath has versus what David has even gives the appearance that this is an underdog story. And I think that some of the giants that we face in life seem a lot like we're an underdog as well, right? We're overmatched. For example, in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 11, in that passage that talks about the armor of God and talks about how we fight against in a spiritual battle, talks about the wiles of the devil, the craftiness and the experience of the devil. As a matter of fact, in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8, we read about the devil being like a roaring lion, right? We seem somewhat overmatched in life, especially when we're dealing with temptations. And we can feel a lot like the Israelites did in verse 40. We can start to feel like that maybe what we see before us is too great for us to overcome. And as a result, we can be shaking with fear. But also think about David's faith in God. And this is where I think that David and this story is more than an underdog story, right? Because if God be for us, who can be against us? If the God who created the world and everything in it is on your side, and if John says, greater is he who is in you than he who is in the world, if John is telling us that as Christians we have the power of the Almighty, and if we look back even in this Old Testament period when David is fighting this giant, that the creator of the universe was on David's side, does it really start to seem like an underdog story? Only underdog story in the sense of if you're looking at Goliath being in the disadvantage. And really, I think that's the way David saw it. David didn't look at Goliath and think about how big and how tall and his wingspan and how much does he weigh and, you know, can I really knock him over or what could happen? David thought, you know what? This guy's no match for God. And so really, I think the idea was Goliath has a disadvantage here, not me. Everyone's looking at me and my stature and they're looking at what's in my hands, the tools that are in my hands, a staff and some stones and a sling. But he had God on his side. As a matter of fact, David's faith is rather impressive. In verse 37, moreover, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go and the Lord be with you. Almost like, you know, go ahead. We don't really want to see this happen, but you're the only option that we got because no one else wants to go there. So you just go and we hope the Lord is with you. He doesn't say that here, but he says, go and the Lord be with you. In verse 45, then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword, with a spear, with a javelin. You see, again, I think David is feeling like he's not the underdog here, but rather Goliath is the underdog. But I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defiled. I want to tell you, this kind of faith that David has is the kind of faith that you and I need, right? To conquer some of the giants and to deal with some of the struggles and some of the challenges and some of the fears that we have in life. James, in James chapter 1, beginning with verse 2, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience." God's faith in God will produce a faith that gives us patience. And if you look down at verse 12 in James chapter 1, "Blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him." How many of you know 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13? You know, I hope that's a passage that you will stick close to as you are maturing in your faith and growing up, and especially growing up with friends who are not very Christ-like at times. It's just to remember this passage. Listen to what Paul says. "No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful," the faithfulness of God here, "who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make a way of escape that you may be able to bear it." God, now this is a passage dealing with sin. Okay, let's understand that. God doesn't test you with sin or tempt you with sin. He allows you to be tested with sin. But when you are tempted and when you are tested, not by God, what God says is He will step in and provide a way of escape for you. He will give you the strength to bear it, to keep your faith intact. Paul says it this way in Philippians 4, verse 13. "I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength." I think about number four, what is available to you and me, and then take what's available and let God use it for His glory. You see, that's what David did, right? What was available to God, to David? Well, David chose a couple of things that were available to him, right? He took 5 smooth stones. He had a sling. That was available to David. He also used his staff. That was available to David as well. But what David did was he fully trusted in God. You know, I think about, you know, we say that God helped David to overcome in this battle. And in a sense, that's true. I think maybe a better perspective to have is that we consider the fact that David said, "God, I'm going to fully surrender my heart, my life to You. I'm going to trust You, and I'm going to let You use me." And I think that's a little bit of a different perspective, that we fully trust in God and we turn to God, we turn everything over completely to God. We turn to God to help us in time of need. And what does God do? He is a very real and present help to those of us in time of need. Was there ever a very real and present help for a person in time of need like David? David needed God, but he had completely sold out to God. He'd given his heart and his life. He put his trust in God. And as a result, what did God do? God used him. He took what God had given and He used him. Now let's think about this for just a moment. We'll close this way. So why 5 stones? Has anyone guessed why 5 stones yet? Does anyone know why 5 stones? Well, we know what one stone was used for, right? What was the first stone used for? First stone was used for Goliath, right? Right? Goliath. So someone says, well, if David had all of this faith, and you just made that point a couple of points ago, number 3, David's faith in God, then why did David need 5? I mean, if David had all of this faith, and he knew that God could help him in his time of need, and that God was a very real and present help, why didn't he just select one? Well, I think the answer may be in 2 Samuel 21, beginning with verses 17 through 22. And let me tell you that I listened to this passage several times, and I'm going to just automatically tell you up front, I'm going to botch these names. These aren't names that we use often. I mean, I get to some of these Old Testament names, and I'm just like, why did they put that in here? But it's important. Look at verse 17. "But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, came to his aid and struck the Philistine and killed him." Who did he strike? Who did Abishai strike? He struck the Philistine. You can't see that, but I want you to understand this is brother number 1. Okay?
He struck the Philistine and he killed him. Then the men of David swore to him saying, "You shall go out no more with us to battle, lest you quench the lamp of Israel." Verse 18, now it happened afterward that there was again a battle. So we've got one Philistine down. A battle with the Philistine at Gob, and then Sibekai, the Hushathite, killed Saph. That's number two killed right here. Who was one of the sons of the giant. So he's a son of the giant. Verse 19. And again there was a war at Gob with the Philistine where Elhanah, the son of, your guess is as good as mine, the Bethlehemite, killed the brother of Goliath. This is number three. Killed the brother of Goliath, the Gittite, the shaft of whose spear was like a weaver's beam. Verse 20, yet again there was another war at Gath where there was a man of great stature who had six fingers on each hand and six toes on each foot. And I want to tell you, when I read this, I couldn't help but laugh. 24 in number. I mean, okay, you had six and six and six and six. I mean, how many is that? That's 24. But they put it in the scriptures right here. Okay, I thought that was awesome. And he also was born to the giant. So that's number four. So when he defiled Israel, Jonathan, the son of Shimeah, David's brother, killed him. Verse 22, these four were born to the giant in Gath and fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. Who were these other four stones for? What happens when you kill one person in a family? The family members want some revenge, right? And we've seen that play out over time, time after time after time. And what, excuse me, what Goliath had was four brothers. And you may not have even known that. And I think the idea is that he had one for Goliath, but he had four other ones in case the brothers come for revenge. He put his faith completely in God. I only need five stones, David thought. I need one for Goliath and I've got four more if the brothers come forward. Now what's interesting is you may not have even known that, that Goliath had four brothers. Let alone even realize that David and his friends actually killed the four brothers. They killed all five. David killed Goliath and his friends killed the other four. And why did they kill the other four? Because they wanted revenge. But again, when you think about why five smooth stones, just a little research in Scripture tells us very clearly, David had enough faith to kill Goliath with one stone. And he had enough faith to kill brother number one with one stone, and brother number two with one stone, and brother number three with one stone, and brother number four with one stone. Five smooth stones, one for Goliath, and one for his brothers. I think one of my favorite verses, and probably one of your favorite verses when we think about a story like this, and we start to reflect on some of the giants that we face in life, is Psalm 27:1. In Psalm 27:1, in this beautiful and poignant way, the psalmist shares this very thought. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? What a great faith to have in a God, to put your faith and your trust in a God like that. And in this story, that's exactly what we get to see. We get to see God be that very real and present help in time of need. We get to see a God who is the strength of David and who is the life of David. And that's why David, on this particular occasion, was not afraid. Again, with God on our side, the giants in our lives can be overcome. And actually, the giants in our lives are the underdogs and not you and me. These stones represent Goliath and his four brothers. But they remind us about a man who put his complete trust and faith in God. Now, the thing about it that's true is David was not a perfect man. David made some very serious mistakes on occasion. He made some pretty bad mistakes, some pretty bad mistakes, just like you and I are going to make some bad mistakes. But we have to remember to come back to God, to give God our heart once again, to continue to seek after God with all of our heart. It was this very man in Acts 13, verse 22, that God said, is like a man after my own heart. God knew the life of David. And God knew everything about his mistakes and his faults, and he still made that statement anyway. And I think that's important for you and me. But this reminds me that if we have any need, small or giant, we can come to God. If we'll cast our cares on Him, we know that He cares for us. And He'll help us in our time of need. Now, after church, you can have a rock to remind you of this story. But ask your parents first, because if you pick up a rock, I'm going to assume that you ask your parents. And when a window is broken, I can blame them. Not me. But I want you to have a rock. And if you want to get a couple, that's fine. Write something on it. Maybe something that's personal to you. And look at it every once in a while. And let it remind you that God is able to help you overcome whatever that thing is you wrote on it. Because God certainly helped David overcome Goliath, brother number one, brother number two, brother number three, and brother number four. If we can help you in any way in your response to salvation, whether to become a New Testament Christian or just to help you gain some encouragement from your spiritual family, then we encourage you to come as together we stand and as we sing.